Hello and welcome to the November 2012 IFRIC Update podcast. My name is Michael Stewart, Director of Implementation Activities at the ISB, and I'm joined today by three members of staff here at the ISB. We have April Pittman, Patrick LaFlau, and Leo Piombino. The issues that we're going to talk about today were matters discussed at the November 2012 meeting of the IFRS Interpretations Committee. And the views that you'll hear presented will be those of the presenters and not necessarily those of the IFRS Interpretations Committee or the IASB. The first issue that we'll start to talk about today is one relating to going concern and in particular the disclosures about going concern. Now, April, what can you tell us about this issue?
Oh, thanks, Michael. Yeah, we received a request for clarification about IS1 presentation of financial statements. Now, IS1 includes guidance on when financial statements should be prepared on a going concern basis, and it also requires that when management are aware of material uncertainties about an entity's ability to continue as a going concern, those uncertainties should be disclosed. Now, the submitter of the issue thinks that the guidance about this disclosure isn't clear. After defining the issue with the submitter, we conducted our usual outreach with the International Forum of Accounting Standard Setters, and also this time with regulators and the larger accounting firms, because this is a very wide-ranging issue.
And did we get a good response to that outreach?
Yes, we did. 24 of the bodies we contacted responded, spread across all types of respondents and geographies. And what they told us was that the guidance on when the financial statement should be prepared on a going concern basis is clear. It's applied consistency and it works well in practice. And that guidance is that you prepare the financial statements on a going concern basis unless management intends to liquidate the entity, intends to cease trading, or has no reasonable alternative but to do so. So it's quite a high threshold to decide you won't prepare the financial statements on a going concern basis, and all the respondents agreed with that. Where we did find diversity was in the second requirement in IS1, and that's to disclose any material uncertainties that cast doubt on the entity's ability to continue as a going concern. In many cases, we found that that disclosure requirement was interpreted in accordance with local insolvency regulations. So in some jurisdiction, that results in a routine disclosure of all the judgments made in the annual assessment of going concern, and that judgment might even be supported by forecast data in some regions. Now, at the other extreme, some respondents thought that you didn't need to disclose anything about those uncertainties if you were still a going concern at the balance sheet date, which means that you'd never disclose that information. And a part of that view was that some respondents think that if you have a survival plan to continue as a going concern, then the uncertainties must have been resolved. So many of the respondents think that investors need this information much sooner than it's currently provided, because in a number of these cases, material uncertainties won't be disclosed until it's too late to be useful. It was also clear from the outreach we conducted that going concern is really a very sensitive topic for some preparers of financial statements.
Yes, that's quite significant, very helpful feedback that we got there from the outreach. Now, this issue was submitted to us by the IAASB, that's the International Audit and Assurance Standards Board, who set standards for auditing for auditors. And they obviously have guidance within their literature about going concern. And from what I understand, there are some questions about, you know, to what degree is their guidance consistent with our guidance in IFRS? And clearly that's part of some of the broader questions that maybe some would be asking. But with this particular question that's come in, the Interpretations Committee has decided to focus on a narrower question, a particular part of the issue. So, April, can you tell us about what it is that they've decided to focus on?
Yeah, that's right, Michael. We're just going to try to provide clear guidance on when these material uncertainties should be disclosed. And we'll be using a threshold that kicks in before the threshold that's used to decide whether you're still a going concern as a basis for preparing the financial statements. And we're also going to provide guidance about what should be disclosed about those uncertainties once that disclosure threshold is reached. And that disclosure guidance is likely to focus on what the objectives of the disclosure should be. And that's quite a high level, I think, such as understanding the judgments made and assessing those uncertainties, assessing the feasibility of any mitigating actions plan, that sort of information.
Good. And so what are the next steps in terms of this particular project?
Well, we'll take the comments that we received at the November meeting and the additional guidance that we'll receive from the committee member advisors and use that as the basis of a revised draft of the changes to IS1 that we've proposed. Now, that should be discussed at the January meeting, and it'll form the basis of a narrow scope amendment to IS1 that will deal with both the when and the what of disclosures about material uncertainties about going concern.
Thank you, April. A very important topic, that one, and one that we'll be following very closely at the next committee meeting. Now, Leo, turning to an issue relating to IS19 and employee benefits next, and we had a question in about what discount rate or how should a discount rate be selected for discounting the post-employment benefit, the obligation, so the pension liability on the balance sheet. What was the question about that we received?
Yes, thanks, Michael. This issue is about the determination of the discount rate for post-employment benefit obligations. According to paragraph 18 of IS19, the discount rate should be determined by reference to market yields on high-quality corporate bonds. A common approach used in practice is to consider high-quality corporate bonds only the bonds that receive one of the two highest ratings given by a rating agency, for example AAA or AA. The issue is whether corporate bonds with a rating lower than AA can be considered to be high-quality corporate bonds.
And so what did the Interpretations Committee say on this point? What was the results of their discussion?
Yes. The Interpretation Committee noted that IS19 does not specify what grade of bonds should be designated as high-quality, and that an entity shall apply judgment in determining what corporate bonds can be considered to be high-quality corporate bonds, taking into account the guidance in paragraph 84 and 85 of IS19. The committee also noted that an entity policy for determining the discount rate should be applied consistently over time. The committee does not expect that an entity method of determination of the discount rate will change significantly from period to period. The committee discussed but did not conclude on whether a change to the way in which an entity determines the discount rate would be a change in accounting policy or a change in estimate. However, the committee noted that these changes should be accounted for and disclosed in accordance with IS8. The committee also noted that according to paragraph 122 of IS1, an entity should disclose the judgment made in determining the discount rate, if the decision about the discount rate has a material effect on the financial statements.
So the committee is not expecting significant changes then from one period to another in this example. And even when there are some changes needed, then there are disclosures required of the quantification of that change.
Yes.
In the financial statements, whether that is a policy change or an estimate change.
Yes.
Okay. So what are the next steps for this particular issue?
This issue is very significant. At the moment we are discussing this issue internally, and the committee will discuss this issue at the next committee meeting.
Okay. So we'll be looking at that one again in January, I would imagine.
Yes.
Okay. And our next issue that we'll look at is issue related to the draft interpretation on accounting for levies, interpretation of IAS 37, which is provisions, contingent liabilities and contingent assets. Now, this draft interpretation was published in May of this year, May 2012, and was out for comment until the 5th of September 2012. And this draft interpretation had proposed guidance on how to account for levies that are payable by companies as a result of operating in a particular market and in particular looking at what point in time, when do does the liability in respect of those levies arise and therefore should be recognised in the financial statements. Now, Patrick, at this particular meeting of the Interpretations Committee, we were looking at the comments received on that draft interpretation. What did we hear from respondents to the draft interpretation?
Well, there were several important messages from constituents. First, constituents told us that we should address levies with minimum thresholds. This is a very important message that they sent us.
Now, that was an area that was specifically excluded from the scope of the draft interpretation.
Exactly.
And tell us a little bit about that.
Well, the committee couldn't reach a consensus on this topic when it discussed this issue previously. And so that's why it was decided that it would be excluded from the scope of the draft interpretation. But now I think that the committee agreed to rediscuss this issue because everybody agrees that it's not entirely satisfactory that we cannot give any answer on this specific issue.
And this is a circumstance where there's a particular threshold target that if passed at some point during the levy year, then that would trigger a liability. And the question being, should you at an interim date look forward and forecast whether it's probable or not that you'll reach that threshold, and if so, to accrue the levy proportionate to your progress towards meeting that threshold?
Exactly. For instance, it could be a sale threshold or a revenue threshold that you have to meet. And the question is whether you should accrue the liability when you're making progress towards that threshold. The second message that constituents sent us is that we should clarify the scope. Many questions were whether the scope of the draft interpretation is as broad as it seems to be, that is to say, whether we want to address all the levies that fall in the scope of IS 37 that are basically not income taxes. Once again, during the meeting, the last meeting, the committee agreed and confirmed that the scope of the interpretation would be to address all levies that are not addressed in other IFRSs, such as income taxes in IS 12. Another area where there were some questions from constituents is about the notion of exchange transactions that was in the draft interpretation. Again, it's related to the scope of the draft interpretation because the committee decided or tentatively decided to exclude levies that are exchange transactions from the scope of the draft interpretation. Once again, I think that the committee will rediscuss this topic in the next meeting. The idea being maybe that we would include those exchange transactions in the scope of the draft interpretation.
But would the focus then perhaps shift to just how to account for the liability side rather than to attempt to give guidance on whether or not to recognise an asset?
Well, we would focus, as you said, on the accounting for the liability side and for the debit side of the transaction. We would just refer to other IFRSs to determine whether there is an expense or an asset. But this has to be discussed in the next meeting. We also had the message from constituents that we should define more clearly the term levy. And I think that this will be done also, and we will rediscuss the definition of levy in the next meeting. And the last comment, maybe the main comment from constituents, is that although most of the constituents agree that the committee had the right answer technically, some constituents think that the outcome does not reflect the substance of the transaction. For example, constituents noted that when the levy is triggered on a specific date in the legislation, then the outcome from applying the draft interpretation would be that this levy would be recognized as an expense on this specific date. Constituents think that, or those constituents think that some levies or all the recurring levies should be rather accounted for on a specific period rather than accounted for on a specific date. On this topic, I think that the committee during the last meeting confirmed what was said in the draft interpretation. So all the what was in the consensus of the draft interpretation regarding the accounting for the liability to pay a levy was confirmed by the committee.
So where does this bring us to now so far?
Well, there's going to be at the next meeting we are going to rediscuss several topics. As I mentioned earlier, we are going to rediscuss, of course, the topic of levies with minimum thresholds, such as revenue thresholds. We are going to rediscuss the definition of a levy, and we are also going to rediscuss whether the draft, the final interpretation, should also address exchange transactions, and in that case, what would be the consequence on the debit side of the transaction.
Thank you. So another one to keep an eye on for the next meeting. Just to mention a couple of other things that were discussed at the Interpretations Committee meeting in November. There were two tentative agenda decisions that were discussed and published in draft form in IFRIC Update for November 2012. Now, both of these have been discussed at previous meetings, and the committee had concluded its discussions for now at this November meeting. These issues were, first of all, an issue to do with accounting for reverse acquisitions, where the company that is being purchased does not constitute a business, and whether that falls within the scope of IFRS 3 or IFRS 2, so business combinations accounting or share-based payments accounting. And the committee had been looking at the guidance within both of those standards, and in drawing relevant pieces of that literature together, felt that it was possible to identify an appropriate basis for accounting for those sorts of transactions. And that is set out in the tentative agenda decision. Like all tentative agenda decisions, it is just tentative and draft for now. It's open for public comment for a period of 60 days through to the 22nd of January 2013. And so comments received on that tentative agenda decision, whether it's an agreement or disagreement to not add it to the committee's agenda, or whether it's comments on the reasons given or the wording of that tentative agenda decision, are invited and will be considered at the March 2013 Interpretations Committee meeting. And the second tentative agenda decision that the committee has published and discussed again last at the last meeting was an issue related to the interaction of IS 41 agriculture and IFRS 13 fair value measurement relating to valuation of biological assets using a residual method. And again, one that had been discussed a number of times before. In this particular case, the Interpretations Committee has decided that given developments at the IASB to add to its agenda a project to address the accounting for bearer biological assets, and also in recognition of the work being undertaken at the moment by the IASB in terms of developing some educational material on how to apply IFRS 13 and in particular the highest and best use concept within that standard, it felt that it should not be taking that issue onto its agenda at this time. So that one also is open for comment until the 22nd of January 2013. the complete record of all of the issues discussed at the November 2012 meeting of the IFRS Interpretations Committee is available in the IFRIC update, which can be obtained from the ISB website. And just a reminder that the views that you've heard on this podcast today have been those of the presenters and not necessarily those of the IASB or the IFRS Interpretations Committee. Thank you for listening.